Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Or how about the mysterious death of Brittany Murphy? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped murder at the hands of the Manson family? The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton? The real-life murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? The three conspiracies surrounding Marilyn Monroe's death? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Hollywoodland is hosted by me, Jake Brennan, creator of the award-winning music and true crime podcast, Disgraceland. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Hour number two with you until 7 o'clock tonight. Jeff Novak, Mike Hoss. We'll be talking a little bit of college baseball coming up here in this hour. Also, the Saints will work their way into every conversation. We have the triple option. I will tell you, mine is kind of Wimbledon-ish, which is a little strange, but I worked a little bit on this. I spent some time. I went down a rabbit hole.
What if my triple option is about run-pass options? Will that, like, break
the triple option? I don't know. That's a good idea. I don't know. Don't ask me questions like that. I'm not prepared. Earlier this morning, I got to welcome some local TV stations. And, of course, this weekend at the Smoothie King Center, we've got the Hot Wheels Monster Truck Show. It's Saturday, 12:30 and 7:30, Sunday at 2:30. And these are the big trucks that just come in and just maul cars. And they have the Bigfoot Monster Truck that is celebrating 50 years in action, celebrating its 50th anniversary like the Superdome is celebrating there. So I wanted to kind of talk to the driver, who's just a young kid, Caleb Janicic. I did this morning to kind of get his thoughts about what this weekend is going to be like for the Glow and Fire Show at the Smoothie King Center.
First of all, where are you from?
I'm from Indiana, but Bigfoot's out of Missouri, so that is where I live now.
So, Bigfoot, 50 years. That's impressive to begin with. I know that because next door, our building, the Superdome, is 50 years. Now, you look like you're about 12. Yes. I don't know. How old are you?
Yeah, I'm actually 29, believe it or not. So,
but that's got to be a huge responsibility for a truck that really probably, you know, kind of started it all like 50 years ago.
Yeah, definitely. It is our 50th year this year, Bigfoot, and it is a big responsibility, but I love it and always followed Bigfoot. So just driving it during its 50th is awesome. It's a dream come true for me just to drive that truck anyways, but this year has been extra special.
Does one get involved into this type of racing or exhibition, however you want to, you know, describe it, competition?
Yeah. A lot of guys, they start off as like being like crew guys or just being around it in some way, shape or form. Like, I mean, even track crew guys or somewhere along the way as far as doing shows and stuff like that. And then guys just kind of get their feet into it and then get their feet wet, and that's where a lot of it starts from, just guys doing crew work. That's what I did and crewed for almost 2 years, and then last year they asked if I would start driving.
So that people understand, this is not a dirt track. There's about 20 to 30 cars, not new cars, but cars lined up, and it is just a smash and go.
Yeah, and so that's a lot of work that goes into it, like I just said, like with the track crew guys. Fridays are always like a prep day. There's a lot of work that goes into this every weekend. This is like four long days, three or four long days of just work, and we do it every weekend, and it's a lot of fun out there. Like you said, there's like 30 cars out here that we get ready, and we run over every weekend.
As the media relations manager for the building, I'm not sure how I feel about the title of the show, Glow and Fire.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, the glow comes from the show is actually in the dark, which is a lot different than what people are used to seeing. The lights go down and then all the trucks have lights on them. For one part of the show, a truck has a set of lights on it that kind of matches the theme of the truck. And then the second half of the show is fire. So there's like orange and red lights on all the trucks. And then the pyrotechnics change for the second half of the show too. So that's where that all comes in. It's just it's a very different element. It's gotten away from like motorsports, like what you mentioned. It's so much more of like entertainment more these days. And with technology and everything, that has come a long way also. So there's all kinds of different lights and things like that.
And maybe this is true in a lot of the venues you play, but certainly here at the Smoothie King Center, I mean, the distance between the cars and the there's no bad seats. You are in the action.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing that's unique about doing a show like an arena. It gets people so much closer to it, and it's just a lot different feel. Obviously, we're in a tighter building, so it's like the trucks are – we're only able to do so much, but this is pretty normal for us being in an arena like this, a basketball or a hockey arena. So it's just a very different element compared to, like, you know, that there's these bigger shows out there, but this gets you a lot closer, and it's just a lot different feel, and it's a whole different vibe.
Where are you in this tour? I mean, I know it's always just kind of random. I know you had to, I heard that the crew had July 4th off, so that must have been nice. Yeah. But typically, where are you in this tour, and how busy does it get from here on?
This is the start of a 12-week stretch right now. But basically, I mean, this is year-round. We don't really get a lot of weekends off. This is basically from the start of the year all the way up until Thanksgiving most of the time. Our only off time or off season, you could say, would be like from Thanksgiving to Christmas. But this pretty much goes on year round. This is pretty much every weekend. We do about 30 to 35 weekends a year is not uncommon. These Hot Wheels shows, we do 3 or 4 of these shows every weekend. So doing 100 shows a year is not really unlikely.
So as we're sitting here, this is radio, we're standing next to Bigfoot. The top of the 50 would be, I don't know, 10 feet in the air or whatever you would, however that is. You are 10 to 12 feet up in the air. When you leave this building and go get in your vehicle, yeah. I don't know what it is, but it's got to be a little jarring to get used to driving like a regular citizen. I'm going to run over that car over there.
Yeah, there's signs where you wish we could, but it's weird. It's like, you know what you're in. So it's like, you know when you're back in your regular vehicle, because when you're in this thing, it's like, it's totally different too, because you have a helmet and everything on. So the whole feel is just totally different. And, but yeah, it's still a dream for like everybody, I think, when you're stuck in traffic to be in one of these.
And finally, just it is the ability, because it's kids, right? Yes. I mean, it's you know, that is your target audience. It's loud,
yes.
And it's, you know, it's about the entertainment. It's glow and fire, yes. Right? I mean, yep. It's got to be cool.
Yeah, definitely. And that's the coolest thing about all this. That's what keeps all of us going. And it's all about kids and families and coming out and just having a good time and putting on a good show for them, and hoping that they're entertained and come back again next year or wherever we're at next, and just putting on a good show and doing a good job out there.
Caleb Yanovich having a good time getting to drive Bigfoot, the monster truck, Hot Wheels monster truck, in this its 50th year, 1975, just like the Superdome. Get your tickets, smoothiekingcenter.com or Hot Wheels Monster Trucks Live. .com this weekend, 12:30, 7:30, and 2:30. And you'll see they're going to turn the lights off, but not off, down. And the trucks are like
it's LEDs. It's going to be like a horror movie in there.
Right, sorry, trucks have like LEDs in the first half and then pyrotechnics in the second
half. Sounds like fun. I miss pyrotechnics in the Superdome.
Yeah.
You know? Like I can't remember. I was watching a video on Twitter the other day of, there was once a fire and the guy had to like climb out and like put it out. It was like a burlap sack, and John Madden's like, oh wow, what's going on up there?
Yeah,
and I had never seen that before. That was before the
incident that we don't have pyrotechnics anymore.
Well, right, that was in Cincinnati, I think, that actually got rid of it completely. Yeah. I had never seen that game. I didn't know that existed. So I was enraptured watching this happen. Like, what's going to happen? And then the thing just floats down to the field and burns a hole in the turf. Oh, man. Weird stuff. Football was a lot weirder back in the 80s.
No, you're right. That is very true. Big weekend for college baseball. It's the draft on Sunday. We're going to talk to David Seifert, the director of college scouting at D1 Baseball, after this break here on...
The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
On WWL. Welcome back. Mike Hoss, Jeff Nowak with you until 7 o'clock tonight. We believe in the power of being everywhere, so listen to WWL anytime, anywhere. Get the WWL shows you love. Dave Cohen, Tommy Tucker, Newell, Scoot, Sports Talk, and all the local content you crave on the Odyssey, iHeartRadio, and the TuneIn apps. Be talking with Dave Seifert soon, talking a little college baseball. It is a drop off because I don't watch, I don't, I'm not deep into college baseball, March, you know, April. But, you know, by May, I'm in. And then when you get to the College World Series, after the LSU won, I was like, man, you know, that next night, Monday night, I was like, oh, God, there's nothing. You know, you're just like, ah. You get so used to it, especially with the regional SEC tournament, regional,
yeah,
super regional. And at the time, it was Ben McDonald. It was like the same group every night you were kind of just hanging, spending time with, 4-hour rain delays at 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, it's just, it was kind of like, oh, it's over? It's such a cool thing. I've only been to the College World Series like, I think, 4 times. LSU won it twice while I was there. Lost a couple of times. It's such a unique place and it's such a cool tournament. And so the draft begins on Sunday. Bunch of LSU players involved. Cade Anderson. The question will be, where does he go? One, you know, St. Paul's in Covington. So good to see the local products. So I'm interested to see. Other than that, that's about all I can tell you about baseball. But who knows? We'll have to wait and see. The Tulane's Michael Lombardi is on. One of the things I wanted to talk, I hope, you know, we're trying to get David. I was looking at the top 250 of the draft for baseball. Baseball is a crapshoot. You got high school kids. You know, you got a lot of factors in there. But there's a high school in California, Corona High School, and they got four high school kids in the top 100. They got two in the top 7. Seth Hernandez, a pitcher, and Billy Carlson, shortstop, then a third baseman, and then a guy named Ethan Bingaman. They got four kids in high school.
Yeah. You think they lost a lot of games?
You think like I think. I went, oh, my God, how big. Got upset in the state sectional tournament.
Wow.
So did not win.
Well, you know, baseball's tough, though, because you can't win with one or two players. Right?
Nope.
Basketball team like Montverde Academy, right? When you have Cooper Flagg and Liam McNeely, two first-round draft picks from this recent draft. One was number one overall. One was like 24th or 27th. He was the guy from UConn. You're not going to lose games. If you have two superstars in basketball, Rutgers aside, Rutgers is like the anomaly because they did and they lost a lot of other games. You can win. In baseball, one ace pitcher and one star hitter, you need a team in baseball. Like, you can't just win with stars. That, all that said, if you have Paul Skeens and Dylan Cruz, it'll do something for you.
Two pitchers, you can go a distance. Dave Seifert, Director of College Scouting at D1 Baseball, joining us. Dave, welcome to the show. You're on with Mike Haas and Jeff Nowak. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
So it begins on Sunday, right, the draft, and we'll talk LSU a little bit. There's a bunch of guys, if you just kind of look at whatever top whatever you want to, Cade Anderson, Anthony Ianson, Chase Shores, Daniel Dickinson, Jared Jones. I think those are the LSU guys, at least in the top 100. How strong are the LSU kids going to be, do you think, in this draft?
Well, I think with Anderson, you're talking 1-1. He's most likely going to go there. If he doesn't go 1-1, he'll go second. So very strong start there. And Ianson, for me, he's going to go around pick 30, maybe a few before, maybe a few after. But obviously another real, real strong showing there for him, after each of those two did in the World Series, but really the whole year. And then you mentioned Dickinson and Shores. I think both those guys, for me, Dickinson maybe a little bit earlier than Shores, but they're both second round, early to mid second rounders. And then Jared Jones, third round for me, but may go a little early as Towers special. And then the other guy I'd probably take in the top 5 rounds, or I would be Ethan Frye. Really liked him as well. He's just on the outside of that top 100 you referred to. He's probably around 110, 115, but those six are pretty strong.
You know, with Cade in particular, like obviously a few years ago, everyone knew Paul Skeens was – why Paul Skeens was great. You could see it just pop up the screen at 100 miles an hour. But with Cade, it's a little bit more nuanced, it feels like. And, you know, he doesn't have that overpowering arm, but it's from the left side, which means he'll be up in the majors in the not-too-distant future. But what is it about Cade that makes him, in your opinion, the number one pick in the draft?
Well, he not only combines, you know, present performance, which is part of, obviously part of the factor. I mean, you don't want to, if you're going to 1-1, you don't want a guy who's all projection, right? Well, there's no projection. Well, there is some projection with Anderson. That's what the intriguing part is. He's this good now. He's slender built. He's going to put on some weight, add a little durability. I think clubs are a little afraid just with, you know, the Tommy John in 2022 he had, but also he doesn't have the largest frame, but he's not skinny by any means, but they don't know if he'll be a one. But we're not looking at really anybody in the draft like Skeens, right? There's no ace out there, and Anderson's pretty special. Like I said, he's got the present performance, he's got some projection, and he has the stuff. I mean, he pitches with three main pitches, but he can just really manipulate the baseball, excellent feel, he's competitive, he proved durable this year. Personally, I'm glad he bounced back from his 135-pitch outing at Oklahoma, but that was my big deciding factor when he went from, you know, maybe the fifth guy on the board to number one, where he bounced back from that, he stayed healthy, and he performed even better after that. I mean, so that was a slam dunk for me.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Or how about the mysterious death of Brittany Murphy? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped murder at the hands of the Manson family? The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks, the three conspiracies surrounding Marilyn Monroe's death. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Hollywoodland is hosted by me, Jake Brennan, creator of the award-winning music and true crime podcast, Disgraceland. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
When you look at LSU baseball right now, really just, I mean, certainly the power of the transfer portal, the power of NIL money across the board at LSU, football, basketball, baseball, and then throw in the trifecta with Jay Johnson winning it in 23 and 25 and just got there in 21. I mean, this is, I mean, that's the destination, right? I mean, you get from a transfer guy or an NIL guy or just a, you know, a high school kid like William Patrick out of St. Frederick High School up in Monroe. And he's, you know, he's high on and he's in the top 100, but he's kind of looking at LSU. I mean, they're just in one of these unique phases of excellence.
Yeah, I think everything you mentioned is 100% true. And I think if you look at, there's been four prep players to take their name out of the draft so far, and they're all four are very good. They're all top 150 prospects, so it's not like it's just some random kid taking his name out. But half of them, two of them, were LSU commits. So I think that even speaks more to the power of just LSU baseball right now. It's at a all-time high, and there's no slowing it down right now.
You know, so some of the other LSU guys, a guy like Ianson, you know, where do you expect him to fall? I think there's a pretty wide range for him, and he's got a skill set that I think will be intriguing at the pro level. I for the life of me can't figure out where I feel like he's going to go. I'm curious, where do you land on him?
I think he's going to go around pick 30, towards you know, after the, I don't know, they call it the comp round after the first, but before the second. I think that's where he'll land. I mean, there's two breaking pitches he has. They're distinct breaking pitches. They're both swing and miss. I hate to say he only throws 96, 97. You know, that's kind of today's. But his fastball doesn't have the best metrics or the swing miss behind it, but it's good enough when paired with those two breaking balls. And he's just competitive. He's athletic. He's everything else you're looking for in a pitcher.
I don't know if you were listening or you were on the line at the top of this conversation. I was talking about, because I'm going to be honest, I'm the Saints play-by-play guy. I don't spend a lot of time on the Major League Baseball draft, I got to be honest, but I'm in full transparency. But I'm looking through the list, and I'm going Corona High School, California, right? Seth Hernandez, top three. Billy Carlson, top seven. Brady Ebel, I'm not sure how you say it, and another guy, Ethan. They got like four guys in the top 100. That's an amazing. Is that like just a factory of for baseball?
Yeah, I think that whole part of the country is a factory. I've never heard of three on the same high school this high. I'm sure there's, you know, going back, I'm sure there is somebody, but Ebel and Carlson, they're both shortstops, and they alternate games at shortstop. One plays short, and the other one plays third, and they just do it back and forth. Because can you imagine having two first-round shortstops on your high school team? So that's how the coach kind of solved that. Not really a problem, but that's how we went with it.
Wow, that's amazing. And the final question I have, because it started when we were talking about Cade Anderson and Tommy John, but do we look at Tommy John's surgery different than we did 15 years ago? Maybe less. I was reading an article where parents of 15, 14-year-old kids were having unnecessary, unneeded, preemptive Tommy John surgery, almost for kind of it makes the arm better. Like, do we look at like Tommy John in the day? Right, I'm old. Was different, but now it doesn't feel like it carries the same kind of negativity.
Oh no, I agree 100%. When I was scouting with the Philadelphia Phillies, scouting just 12 years ago, 10 years ago, if the guy had Tommy John surgery in his past, his folder kind of went over in this stack, and then you kind of just picked off the other pitcher. You know, you kind of just ranked the other pitchers, how you're going to take him in the draft. But now it's not so much. I mean, now I think it's assumed that everybody will have a Tommy John surgery. Everyone will break down. It's just a matter of when. I think the thing that's being studied now is how long does that first Tommy John surgery last? So, today I saw just by chance that you asked that question, Clark Schmidt from the Yankees. I remember when he was drafted, just after having Tommy John surgery. I believe it was 2017. Yeah, 2017 it was. And here it is 8 years later, he's going to have a second. So is it 8 years? Is it 5 years? Is it 10? Some guys have had three Tommy Johns, you know what I mean? So I think with Anderson, you just never know. It's on the individual. But so if a club says, okay, it's going to be 6 years, well, at least they got 6 years of Anderson before it might happen again, and rush him to the big leagues and get your money, you know, get your money as worth out of him as soon as you can. But to answer your original question, yeah, the view on Tommy John has totally, totally changed.
Yeah, it's a strange thing, and it's like when you look at a pitch, you almost have to be like, okay, has he had it yet? All right, we're in a good range here. We could sign him for however long, at least in the pros. But I just got one more LSU question, and then we'll let you run. You know, we talked about the guys at the top. Some of these day two, the Monday, or I think the Monday's rounds 4 through 20, you know, Daniel Dickinson, Chase Shores, Jared Jones, Ethan Frey. Is there anyone in that group who you feel strongly about in terms of, okay, I think this guy's going to be a good pro? Like, who out of that group do you feel like profiles the best to the pro level?
Out of those four, I would, for me, it's Dickinson, just because he does everything well. You know, he doesn't have that super tool, but he's going to go grind it. I mean, heck, you can tell me my story's wrong, but this is at least what I heard. He didn't disclose a broken hamate until after the national championship was won, and he had it the entire playoffs. And that just speaks to his makeup. I know it also speaks to Coach Day being a little coy about injuries and things like that, which I totally 100% agree with. But, like, Dickinson to play through that, I know they dropped him in the order. I know his production wasn't the same, but that just speaks volumes. I've always liked him since I saw him in the Cape for the first time last summer. Again, he's not going to be, I don't think he's going to be a superstar, but he's going to be a darn good super utility type or a starter in his best years in big leagues for a long time. Shores could do the same as a closer. I think it's obvious now he's not a starter, but if it was me, I'd go Dickinson and Shores. I also like Ethan Frey. Jared Jones got that power. There's just a lot of strikeouts there, and that usually doesn't play in pro ball, but yeah. You got a whole mess of them. I like some of the relievers too. I know you didn't really ask about them, but Mayers has been looking really good in the Major League Baseball Draft League. I know you guys saw his good arm all year, but he's throwing with better control now, and you never know what could happen if he gets just more consistent innings.
Well, it will be an exciting time Sunday and Monday. David, where can people read your stuff, get your stuff?
D1baseball.com. And also prepbaseball.com. I handle the college scouting for both of those businesses.
Well, good. Well, we definitely appreciate your time on this Friday. Enjoy the weekend. I know it's a big time. It's always, you know, the draft is big for us here in New Orleans in football. And watching these LSU kids, it'll be exciting. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thanks, David.
David Seifert, Director of College Scouting at D1 Baseball. Take a break. How about the Cape?
I know you heard it. I know you heard it. You were talking to me like I was an elitist over here saying the Cape. But, yes, the Cape.
College baseball, or minor league baseball at the Cape.
Cape Cod League, baby.
Cape Cod. All right, take a break. Back after this here on Sports Talk. Mike Hoss, Jeff Nowak here on WWLAMFM.com and always free on the Odyssey app. Welcome back to Sports Talk on this Friday, July 11th. Good start. Saints will have their training camp on the 22nd. First practice will be on the 23rd. They go to California on August 6th. Their last practice will be Thursday, August 28th of what they call training camp. Now it's time.
What do you call it?
Well, I mean, I never know when it's over, right?
Yeah, that's
like
fair.
When it's like
that's
this fair. The time,
right? Because the last like week before the season starts is not technically training camp,
right? Yeah. So they play the Broncos on the 23rd, then they're off. I don't know. We haven't had a chance to talk to them. They're off on the Sunday, the 24th, and then it just says no access. No access.
Yeah. It's like a bye week.
I don't think I've ever seen that before.
Yeah.
Does that mean they're off?
I think they kind of get a week off like the bye week.
Well, they say off.
Yeah.
I've never seen no access.
I don't know, man. You're asking the wrong guy.
All right, time for the triple option. Colin, you want to go first?
I can get us started. I know that you guys were kind of previewing what we would do earlier, but I'm going to take us in a different direction. We're going to go to the NBA. Where I love to talk about these contracts, the analytics behind these contracts. ESPN put out an article earlier today from someone with an analytical mind, Zach Cram, who took a look at who might be the first NBA player to make $82 million a year. 82 is significant because that would mean you're getting paid $1 million per game. And he thinks this is coming sooner rather than later. Obviously, SGA signed a deal earlier this offseason with his fourth year in 2031, 79 mil, just shy of it. So we're on the cusp. And he later in the article refers to who might be on the horizon for that. He looks towards the 2020 draft class, the two candidates.
Cooper?
No,
2020,
sooner.
I'm sorry.
2020, way sooner. He thinks Halliburton could have been in the mix.
No way.
Don't think so anymore. Anthony Edwards might be.
That's the correct answer.
That's it. He will be eligible if he continues with the path he has been these past couple of years for a four-year, $345 million deal. That'd put him at $86.25 million a game. I think there are a lot of players in the league that'd be worth that.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Don't the Pels have any.
I asked for $1 million of broadcast. They said no, the powers that be at WWL, so...
I'd give it to you.
Yeah, okay, I'll hold you to that.
The money is so... It's just
it's,
hard
it's
to...
make-believe. It's right. Not real. It's
like you used. We used to have a reaction.
Yeah.
Right? There was a... Now...
Now it just doesn't make sense.
You're numb.
There's an earlier part in the article where a decade ago, the salary cap was set at $63 million, right. Which is about $85 million adjusted for inflation today. But today, it's at 141, almost double what it should be if it was adjusted.
And every year, it becomes more and more lucrative to play professional sports in the state of Florida.
Yeah.
And Texas.
Like, what a great recruiting advantage.
Right. Well, somebody talked about that. One of the reasons he went to Miami was that no state.
Yeah.
Texas,
you make your
Miami.
Money.
Yeah.
Right.
How many is it 12? How many's on the team?
Players total? 15.
Yeah. 15?
Yeah.
That was only, a question was asked.
Yeah, you can have 15 on your active roster. But then they have two ways. It gets a little text more complicated.
Line. Me or you, my friend?
I can go. Mine is a little broad, but I was watching tennis this morning. And, you know, a few years ago, they went to the all, or at least most of the major tournaments went to the Hawkeye calling the in and out calls. And it actually, they still yell it. But it's fake. It's like, you know, and if it's really far out, it's like quiet, like, out. And if it's really close, like out. But, you know, and it's topical because, you know, MLB, they're talking about the ABS or the balls and strikes review. Football, they're trying to figure out ways to do like the robot line judges and whatever. And my take is that I hate it. My take is that, like, yes, if you're a purist of the game, you want these calls to be 100% right all the time. For me, I look at sports as entertainment. And one of the benefits of allowing human beings to call games is that they do make some mistakes sometimes. And you do have to kind of work that into the product. But like John McEnroe, for example, is calling these tennis matches. And you see these like really close calls, and they all just believe in this system now. So it's close, but you're like, ah, they must have got it right. But like John McEnroe, like his nickname was the bad boy of tennis. Like his claim to fame is I scream at umpires, and that's the entertainment value. I want to see the manager running out and getting in the home plate umpire's face because he missed a call, right? Like, I get it. You don't want that. That's not what the league wants. But like, that's the fun part. And I've said this before, and I believe it. Like, the chain gang did not take too much time. I'm okay with a little extra time added to games. For the drama, for the entertainment.
Yeah.
And here's the thing.
But you gotta have to have some, right? When do you stop? How much is too much technology?
Sure, but like the robot like line calls, we didn't need that. The chain gang, they're so good at their jobs already. They get out there
they got
fast.
The credit cards,
we're talking
man.
Like 30 seconds, and that's peak drama in the NFL.
I
when
agree.
It's
I
like,
agree
oh, it's
that.
Inches. It's going to be so
Wait
close.
Till
Let's
pulls
get the
that
chain.
Chain.
Oh, he stretches it out. It's got one link. You know, and yes, occasionally you're going to have. The line calls get it wrong, or like, you know, the Jadeveon Clowney hit in the Outback Bowl. That hit doesn't happen if we have the robots calling it, because they get the call right on the field and we don't get that moment. It's like the hit of the year, and his head
Lord.
Pops off his body. So that's my thing. Like, I think we should pump the brakes on using robots to get all these calls right and appreciate, like, part of the game is the drama, and you're taking that away. And it's, I don't know, like, tennis is already boring enough. I want the player to get mad about something. And now we're kind of losing that. And I don't know. I'm kind of pandering or like petering off on this take, but I don't like it. I want to see less of it, not more of it.
So I can't believe we're both going to talk tennis, but this, so I'm not even watching Wimbledon. So Djokovic loses. He was trying to win his 25th Grand Slam. Just some of these things just kind of jump out at you. 25. And so in the finals, it's going to be Jannik Sinner against Carlos Alcaraz. Am I getting those names right?
Yes.
Right? I don't know. I don't even know their names. And I'm going, all right, well, whatever. And they played in the French Open final that lasted 5 hours.
It was a fantastic
and
match.
And 29 minutes. Alcaraz was down two sets, three championship points to come back to win. And my point isn't even that. I don't want to stand there. It's exhausting to me for 5 hours and 29 minutes to stand on the court. Don't swing the racket once. That's a lot to ask for.
Right?
If you started at the Superdome and you just said, to heck with it, I'm going to walk, and you walked at a typical adult pace, for 5 hours and 29 minutes, you'd be at the Twin Span Bridge at Lake Pontchartrain. That's the time period of that tennis match.
You could run a marathon in 5 hours. Yeah. You should
hours
run a marathon in 5 hours.
29 minutes, yeah. Which, of course, is the longest French Open, but not the longest Grand Slam.
Well, the longest match ever was, I can't remember, the American, the big tall guy against the French guy. I can't remember his name. He went to Georgia. I'm losing track. But they had like a 56
and
game.
A Grand Slam?
Yeah,
at
Wimbledon. Because they, at one point, I think it was at Wimbledon, because that was when they didn't have the fifth set tiebreak. So it could just go on forever. And it just happened. And it was like over 3 days. I'll never forget that match.
We'll have to figure that because I don't have that. What I have is the 2012 Australian Open, with Novak Djokovic beating Rafael Nadal in 5 hours and 53 minutes. For the love of...
So that was the final. Yeah, okay. So the longest tennis match ever. It was John Isner and Nicolas Mahut. It was at the 2010 Wimbledon.
That's why you no longer
have the fifth set can go on forever, because it almost did. The match... all told, was 11 hours and 5 minutes. It was played over 3 days. The score of this match was 6-4, 3-6, 6-7, 7-6, 70-68. It was the most insane thing. I remember I picked it up.
I remember that I picked it up
at like 26-25 in the second day, and I was like, surely it ends soon. It didn't even end that day. It was the most insane thing I've ever witnessed. And that's why tennis, you know, one other thing I'll mention. My favorite thing about tennis is that it's the only sport where they make the coach sit in the stands like a concerned parent. And they keep cutting to him. And he's just sitting there like stoic. And there was a point where you weren't allowed to coach at all. They changed that. But it's like, can you imagine like Sean Payton being asked to sit in the stands and be like, you can't yell at the team, Sean. They got to do it on their own. It's the weirdest thing.
Right.
But we're just like, yeah, okay, cool.
That's just the way it is.
We all know where they're sitting. Let's see how they react.
Every time. It's the girlfriend on the phone. Well, why is she on the phone? What is she doing?
Right.
All right, take a break. That is the triple option. Thank you, Colin. Thank you, Jeff. We'll be back after this here on WWLAMFM.com. Always free on the Odyssey app. This is Sports Talk. Mike Haas, Jeff Nowak. Got another hour coming your way. We'll talk with Dolph Jackson, who's the Keeping It Real, Who Dat Sports podcast, founder of Come On In Sports Network. Lots more coming your way. We'll talk a little bit more Pelicans as well, as they've got their second game of the Summer League tomorrow night against the Lakers. Lots more coming your way here on Sports Talk. But now, the news is next.
The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.